ब्रह्म श्री कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर
श्रीमान सर्वेश्वर गौर भक्तवृंद की जय। राम वेदम सुरिंद की जय। गौर प्रेमानंद ओ ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ओ ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ओ ग्लोरीज टू द लोटस फीट ऑफ श्री गुरु एंड गोलोक। So this morning, as described as a reading, Bhagavatam reading, more than a class, but we can discuss things too. We're in the fifth canto, and
English.
Huh?
You don't have English one here?
I have it in this wonderful computer. Everywhere I go. According to, we're supposed to start chapter 26. The final chapter in the fifth canto. This is the least favorite chapter of the devotees. The first thing is, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I say this is the least favorite chapter because it's called A Description of the Hellish Planets. And of course it begins with a summary of a chapter by Srila Prabhupada. He says, the 26th chapter describes how a sinful man goes to different hells, where he's punished in various ways by the assistance of Yamaraj. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Prakriti Kriyamanani Guna Karamani Sarvajaha Bhankara Vimuddhatma Kartaham Vitti Manvite. That bewildered spirit soul, under the influence of the three modes of material nature, thinks himself the doer, Kartaham, thinks himself the doer of activities which are, in actuality, carried out by nature. The foolish person thinks he's independent of any law. He thinks there's no God, no regulative principle, and that he can do whatever he likes. Thus, he engages in different sinful activities, and as a result, he is put into different hellish conditions, life after life, to be punished by the laws of nature. The basic principle of his suffering is that he foolishly thinks himself independent, although he is strictly under the control of the laws of material nature. These laws act due to the influence of the three modes of nature, and therefore each human being also works under the three different types of influences. According to how he acts, he suffers different reactions in his next life or in this life. Religious persons act differently from atheists, and therefore they suffer different reactions. So that's the general principle. Thinking we are independent, ultimately independent of God. Laws mean here the laws of God. Prabhupada has described religion as to obey the laws of God. And when one disobeys the laws, there's punishment. This is a simple thing. Every state, every government also has a way to deal with criminals by punishment. If you think, what is a criminal? What makes someone a criminal? is that a criminal wants to do the things that are really the government can do, but not an individual. For example, if the government prints money, if I want to print my own money, that's a crime. The government can seize property. If it wants to build a highway or something and something's in the way, then they can take it. Of course, the government also is supposed to follow some laws, but anyway, the government has these prerogatives, as they call them. They do these. If I want to take something, just like the tax department, it can come and take your money. Right? You make so much money every month, and the government says this percentage is mine. Nothing you can do about it. They can just take it. But if I come to certain people in place and say, okay, I want everything you make, give me 20%, then I'm a criminal. All I'm trying to do is be like independent, my own government, right? And the government can take people and it can put them in jail, imprison them. If I do it, it's called kidnapping. There's this girl in Austria, is all in all the newspapers, as was some man kept her in a basement or something for years and years and years. Now she's out and telling her story and everything, but that's a crime. The government takes me and puts me in some little room for 20 years, they can do it. So this is basically, a criminal means, I think, I can be the government myself. I'm the same as the government. That creates a havoc for everybody, and so the state puts these people away. If it's peaceful here, it's because some people are in jail. So this is what's necessary. And the government always hopes that by being punished, these people will learn how to obey the laws. Now, when a person is in jail, by force he's obeying the government. He may be all proud and think, I don't care for the government, who are these people, but he's behind bars, and by force they're saying, tell him what he has to do. We are not in jail, we are free citizens. Why are we free? Because we are also obeying the government, but voluntarily we follow the laws. We acquire property the proper way. We don't just take something that belongs to somebody else. We follow the laws, and therefore we're free. But free means we voluntarily obey the laws. Nobody is free not to obey the laws. Only in the state, people obey the laws either voluntarily or by force. This is how it works. So, in the material world, those people who do not obey the laws of God, similarly, sometimes they are put in prison. And now we're going to visit the prison. It's not for revenge. It's for the whole material world. Prabhupada is described as a prison. This is the prison house in the kingdom of God. That means every conditioned soul is a prisoner. We are not in the spiritual world. The spiritual world is a nice place because we are here. Everybody who caused disturbance. So actually everybody in the material world, we also have our project to be God, the same as God, in independence. So the whole material world is to rectify people and part of that rectification is we obey God's laws, this is called good. Our karma is good, our actions are good, and we get some material enjoyment. And if we disobey God's laws, we suffer. This is a karma. Good karma and bad karma. Ultimately, people gradually, after many births, they come to understand that I'm a servant, even though I came here to be independent of God. I'm a servant. I need to obey God's law. I become rectified in this prison of the material world. The whole purpose is for people to become educated and go back to Godhead. Krishna doesn't want that anyone remains behind. He wants everyone to come back. Yeah. So if the whole material world is a prison house, then these hellish planets, we have to say, this is the worst place. The heavenly planets, in the fifth canto, we've already had a tour of all these planets, the Swarga, where the gods are. And also on in Jambudeep, there are Varshas that are also called Boma Swarga, heaven on earth. So these are places of superior material happiness. And those people are in the material world, and they can also come back down again to these. If one acts sinfully, the lower prison. For the demigods, it's like a person in a prison who's been who's a good prisoner. So they give some facility for happiness. He's still in the prison, but some facility is there. He gets a rug and a cell, can go out in the fresh air and stuff like that. Others are so bad that they are way down in the dungeon. So these are the hells. So I'll keep reading. Shukadeva Goswami describes the following 28 hells. And here their names, Tamishra. All these names mean something. Tamisha means darkness. Andhatamisha, another hell, blind darkness. Rolrava, that's a place where these ferocious animals called rurus. So the place is called Rolrava. Maharolrava, big place. Kumbhipaka, just read them. Kala Sutra, Asipatravana. Sukhamukha, Andhakupa, Krimbi Bhojana, Sandamsha, Taptasurami, Rajkantaka, Shamali, Vaitarani, Puyoda, Pranarodha, Vishwana, Lava Bhaksha, Sarame Yadana, Avici, Ayatana, Kshara, Karadhamma, Rakshogana, Bhojana, Shriyaprota, Tandrashuka, Avatta Nirodana, Paryavartana, and Sukhimukha. So then Prabhupada summarizes, a person who steals another's money, wife, or possessions is put into the hell known as Tamisha. Man who tricks somebody and enjoys his wife is put into the extremely hellish condition known as Andhatamisra, a foolish person, absorbed in the bodily concept of life, and who, on the basis of this principle, maintains himself or his wife and children by committing violence against other living entities, is put into hell known as Rolrava. There the animals he killed take birth as creatures called rurus and causes great suffering for him. So he killed them, so they come back. And torture him. For every case, the hells are suffering you undergo, that's based on what you've done. Whatever you've done to others that's damaged or harmful to them, now you know what it feels like as it happens to you, as a way of learning, hopefully. Those who kill different animals and birds and then cook them are put in by the agents of Yamaraj in the hell known as Kundipaka. Kumbha's a pot, a big pot, where they're boiled in oil. A person who kills a brahmana is put into the hell known as Kalasutra, where the land, perfectly level and made of copper, is as hot as an oven. The killer of a brahmana burns in that land for many years. One who does not follow scriptural injunctions, but who does everything whimsically or follows some rascal, is put into the hell known as Asipatrava. A government official who poorly administers justice or who punishes an innocent man is taken by the assistance of Yamaraj to the hell known as Sukaramukha, where he is mercilessly beaten. So all those politicians. You think you're a politician and nobody can do anything to you. If you punish even an innocent person, then there's a consequence. You have to be careful if you have this position. God has given advanced consciousness to the human being. Therefore, he can feel the suffering and happiness of other living beings. In other words, as a human being, I can imagine how another person is suffering. We can have compassion for people. The human being bereft of his consciousness, like a human being who has become dull, is prone to cause suffering for other living beings. He is not able to understand how they feel. The assistance of Yamaraj put such a person into the hell known as Andakupa, where he receives proper punishment from his victims. Any person who does not receive or feed a guest properly, but who personally enjoys eating, is put into the hell known as Kundi Bhojana. So you have some guests, but you don't take care of them, you just take care of yourself. Is taken very seriously. There, unlimited numbers of worms and insects continuously bite him. Yeah, Krimbi means a worm, some kind of worm that Bhojana eats. A thief is put into the hell known as Sandamsha, a person who has sexual relationships with a woman who is not to be enjoyed, is put into the hell known as Taptasurmi. A person who enjoys sexual relations with animals is put into the hell known as Rajakantaka Shamali. A person born in aristocratic or highly placed family, but who does not act accordingly, is put into the hellish trench of blood. Trench means like a big ditch. Trench of blood, pus, and urine called the Vaitarani River. One who lives like an animal is put into the hell called Puyoda. A person who mercilessly kills animals in the forest without sanction, without being allowed to do so, is put into the hell called Pranarodha. A person who kills animals in the name of religious sacrifice is put into the hell known as Vishasana. A man who forces his wife to drink his semen is put into the hell called Lala Baksha. One who sets a fire or administers poison to kill someone is put into the hell known as Sarameyada. A man who earns his livelihood by bearing false witness, who lies by he somehow makes money by lying about other people, accusing other people of crimes or something. Sometimes they're government informants that go to the police and say, this person did this and did that, and they're lying to this person. False witness means, you know, you lie under oath. Is put into the hell known as Avicii. Okay, another paragraph. A person addicted to drinking wine is put into the hell known as Ayapana. One who violates etiquette by not showing proper respect to superiors is put into the hell known as Kshara Karadama. A person who sacrifices human beings to Bhairava. Bhairava is a form of Lord Shiva. A person who sacrifices human beings to Bhairava is put into the hell called Rakshanogana Bhojana. A person who kills pet animals is put into the hell called Shulaprokta. A person who gives trouble to others is put into the hell known as Dandashuka. One who imprisons a living entity within a cave is put into the hell known as Avatanarodhana. A person who shows unwarranted wrath means becomes angry for no good reason. It's unwarranted wrath, angry for no reason. Toward a guest in his house is put into the hell called Paryavartana. A person maddened by possessing riches and thus deeply absorbed in thinking of how to collect money is put into the hell known as Suchimukha. After describing the hellish planet, Shukadeva Goswami describes how pious persons are elevated to the highest planetary system where the demigods live, and how they come back again to this earth when the results of their pious activities are finished. Finally, he describes the universal form of the Lord and glorifies the Lord's activities. So that's a summary of this chapter. In the material world, there are heavens, the highest planetary system of the demigods. One performs pious activities, goes to heaven. But when one is in the heavenly planets, you're just living on this pious credit. It's as though like a person who works, goes to work every day and saves money to go on a vacation on holiday. Finally he gets enough money and so goes to some nice place. Tropical, usually. In America, we all go down to the Caribbean islands, here the Canary Islands of southern Spain, or some nice places, the Dalmatian coast, you know, you go to a nice vacation spot, and you enjoy. You don't work, you're on vacation. You have so much money in the bank for your holiday. And so, you just are spending the money. When it's all gone, it's back to the north, and back to work again. So similarly, a person here in this region, they perform pious activities, but it's like putting a kind of money in the bank. You go, the time of death, you go to the heavenly planets. You use it up, you come back down. And if in the process down here also we commit sinful activities, then also we go down to these hellish planets. Then you pay off the debt for the sinful activities, you atone, and then back up again. Then you can go. So you could, so people just keep going around and around and around. This is the problem with the material world. Even if you're in heaven, any time you have to come back down, and then you commit something sinful, you go to hell, the dangerous place. So now, I just will start reading the texts. Text number one. These are not verses to chant. Like text one goes like this, Rajavacha, the king said, Maharsha etat vaichitrayam lokasya katam iti. King Parikshit inquired from Sukadeva Goswami, my dear sir, why are living entities, people, lokasya, other people, how is it that they are put into different material situations? By Chicham. And there's so many varieties of people in different situations in the universe. Kindly explain this to me. Because in this chapter has already been described so many different places in the universe. The Bhumandala, all the different lands there, and the different kinds of people who live there. And then Vilaswarga, going down from there. The subterranean heavens. And then finally, now down the hellish condition. So he says, why is it? So Prabhupada says in the purport, Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur explains that the different hellish planets within this universe are held slightly above the Garbhodak ocean and remain situated there. This chapter describes how all sinful persons go to these hellish planets and how they are punished by the assistance of Yamaraj. Different individuals with different bodily features enjoy or suffer various reactions according to their past deeds. So where is hell? According to Bhagavatam, it says that the ocean the universe is like a ball. Probably like a football floating on the the Mahatattva. Well, they have very thick shells, and then there's a hollow space inside, and the whole bottom half is filled with water. This is called the Garbhodak Ocean. And then above it, there are the different planetary systems. So the lowest part above the water, right above that water, that's where these different hellish places are situated. They're floating there, slightly above this Garbhodak ocean. And so this chapter describes people go to these planets and punished there by the assistance of Yamaraj. Yamaraj, also known as Dharmaraj, is the person who's in charge of the justice system. Yama means rule or regulation. So he supervises this, the karma. Whatever we do, everything we do is witnessed. There are many, many witnesses. And so Yamaraj knows everything. And then the time of death. Those who need punishment are taken by his assistants. In the Bhagavatam, there is a description. It will happen, I think, in the sixth canto. They describe the history of Ajamila. Ajamila was a person who was born in a pious Brahminical family, and was a young man, nice wife, and everything. One day, he saw in public a very low-class couple in some kind of sexual embrace, rare to see in those days. And the woman, she must have looked at him, and their eyes must have met. Anyways, he became agitated and very attracted to this woman who was laughing and messing around with this guy. And she was like a serving girl. And so he brought her into her house, and basically she became, his wife must have left, and he lived with her. So in this way he became very fond, living with this kind of a prostitute, having children with her, and made his living by crime. Spent his whole father's inheritance on her. Whatever he had, money he had, he wasted it, and then the only way he could make money was by crime. And this he did. Then, at the age of 88, the time of death it came. And because he was so sinful, the Yamadutas, the servants, the agents of Yamaraj, came to get him. It's described in the Bhagavatam that these Yamadutas, they have ropes, subtle ropes, and they go and they with the ropes they tie him onto the subtle body. You see, when at the time of death, the gross body is left behind. But what transfers is not just the soul, but also the subtle body. Manas buddhi ahankara. It is the subtle body which transmigrates along with the soul, and according to the mentality and the desires, one gets another body. So if one is very sinful and is going to be punished, these very terrifying looking guys come, the Yamaraj, assistants, the Yamadutas. Duta means a messenger. And with these subtle ropes, pull the subtle body out of the gross body and drag him off for punishment by Yamaraj. So this Ajamil, you know, he had a whole history that was really, really bad. And because he was also by birth a Brahmana, and it's especially terrible what he did. But just as the Yamadutas are, and he sees time of death, and he sees these Yamadutas. And although he was 88 years old, he had a very young son to whom he was very attached. And he, because of his previous brahminical activities, he had named this young boy Narayan. This is the name of Krishna, Narayana. And so he called on his son. He was terrified. He saw these Yamadutas coming from him. And he called, Narayana, Narayana. And suddenly, four other persons appeared. The Vishnu Dutas, the messengers of Vishnu. They looked just like Lord Vishnu. And they came, and they stopped the Yamadutas from dragging Ajamil off to hell. The Yamadutas had never seen these persons before. Because the Vishnu Dutas normally only come to take somebody who's going to be liberated, go to Vaikuntha. Out of, not just to the heavenly planets, but beyond. So the Yamaraj had no occasion ever to see these Vishnu Dutas. And so there's a debate that takes place between the Vishnu Dutas. There are four Vishnu Dutas. And Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says in his commentary, there's, because the word, the name of God, Na, Rai, and Na, has four syllables, four Vishnu Dutas come. And they stop these Yamadutas from taking them. And the Yamadutas are outraged Because what's the meaning of justice? What's the meaning of law? If some, here's a sinner, and they tell him he's done all these things, they give the whole history. He's fit for punishment. We are servants of Yamaraj, who's a servant of Narayan. This is the system. Why are you stopping us from taking this person? This is the law of karma. And they say that because he recited the name of the Lord at the time of death, all his sins were eradicated. Even though he was not even thinking of the Lord but of his son, nevertheless, because of that reason, he was saved from the Yamadutas. So the Yamadutas make their case, and then the Vishnudutas explain to them. It's clear that the Vishnudutas have more authority than the Yamadutas. They have to do what they say. And so they let him go. And the Yamadutas explain the power of the holy name of Narayan. Although his chanting wasn't exactly pure chanting, because he wasn't even thinking about the Lord, but at the same time, it wasn't offensive. In other words, if he had been chanting, while Ajamiya was committing so many sinful activities, and at the same time, he was chanting the name of Narayan in order to not suffer the results. In other words, if he was sinning on the strength of chanting, then that chanting would not have been effective. But because he just chanted spontaneously the name of Narayan, his sinful reactions were eradicated. So then, anyway, it goes on. So Ajamiya comes back to life. He doesn't leave his body. And he goes to Haridwar, and there he performs more spiritual activities for some time. And then the Vishnudutas come back with a kind of Vimana, a spiritual a vehicle, and escort him back to Godhead. And then there's the next chapter. These Yamadutas go to Yamaraj and ask him, "What's going on here? You know, you're our master. We see you're powerful. You control everything. Who are these people, and why is the chanting of Vishnu's name so powerful?" So that's all the story to come. As Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that even a little bit of advancement in this path can save one from the greatest fear, taking birth, a hellish condition, or an animal birth. In some places, Prabhupada describes when a person goes to a hellish planet to be trained to like the life of an animal. Maybe you're destined to take birth as an animal, like a pig who eats excrement, who eats stool. So you have to be trained to eat it and like it. So thus you go to some hellish planet and you're forced to eat stool until you get a taste for it, and then you can take birth as a pig and so on. None of these things will happen to a person who is just a little spiritual advancement. That's the good news. Let me read a few more texts. Do you have any questions or anything so far? Yeah?
First of all, from the holy book of Bhagavatam, you have described that we are not the doers. The body itself is not the doers.
Yeah, Papa quoted that.
Then why do we have to face the consequences of our actions?
Okay. Because we also have some freedom. If we were just puppets, then there would be no punishment. Punishment means you had a choice. So it says when you're working on the modes of material nature, it means that, for example, if I'm currently now under the control of the mode of passion, that's my karma from previous action. But I have some degree of freedom. And because of that freedom, this Prabhupada calls it a minute freedom, I am liable to punishment or reward because it's my choice. It works like this. Krishna is in control. But the living entities have a little bit of freedom. Because Prabhupada says that every living entity is a tiny sample of God. Whatever God has completely, we have a little bit. He even said that you can understand God, we can understand God by studying ourselves, because we're small samples. Yeah. Just like you take a drop of water, you study it, you can know something about the ocean. So, Krishna has complete freedom. We have a little bit of freedom.
So we are allowed to act towards our free will.
Huh?
We are allowed to act towards our free will.
Yeah, we act according to free will. Now, so according to our free will, that's why, if there's no freedom, why do the scriptures say you should do this, you should not do that? Why bother to tell us? So the idea is there is some freedom.
But the free will always sources of sense enjoyment.
No, it doesn't. No, it does not. Sometimes you're pushed towards sense enjoyment because of the mode of passion. But it is there. But still, you can't decide. People decide. People decide, like me, I decided to give it up. Even though I was raised to be a sense gratificator, I made a decision. And when I made a decision, then immediately Krishna helped. So we decide, do we want to go toward Krishna, or do we want to go away from Krishna? When we want to go away from Krishna, Krishna arranges through the material nature that we will go away. When we want to go back to Krishna, Krishna makes arrangement for us to go back. So we are always controlled by Krishna.
More of passion and ignorance.
And goodness also. But in any case, we are always controlled by the modes of material nature. But how we wish to be controlled, that's our freedom. Like if I want to be a devotee, it means I voluntarily obey the order of Krishna, the order of the spiritual master. That controls my activities. Because I'm a servant, I'm not free in one sense. I'm obeying Krishna's orders, but I'm doing it voluntarily. Then I come under the control, not of this external potency, but of the internal potency. If I say to hell with Krishna, all this stuff, you know, who does he think he is? I can do whatever I want if I want to disobey God. Then I'm put under the control of Durga Devi, the material potency. So either way I'm controlled, either by Durga Devi or by Radharani. Durga is her shadow. One of these ladies will control me. My choice, which one? That's not determined. That's only my decision. So that freedom is there. That's the point of all of this.
One who kills his own parents, which hell he will belong?
What?
One who kills his own parents.
One who what is?
Kills his own parents.
It doesn't say here. I'm sure there's a bigger list somewhere. You know. I didn't mention that one. So anyway, these hells are there above the Garbha ocean. Just above the hellish planets is the planet called Pitriloka. Yamaraj is on that planet, and he supervises the hellish planets, which are just below. He's on this place called Pitriloka. His assistant is called Aryama. His second in command is called Aryama. There's the story that Yamaraj became very tired of this service of just punishing sinful people. He didn't like it. And he would like to, because Yamaraj is a great devotee. He's one of the authorities, one of the Mahajanas on devotional service. His service was like, he didn't get to preach. He was just punishing sinful people. So he wanted to get this chance, and so there's a whole story how he was cursed by a sage. I think Markandeya Rishi was the one who cursed him. Markandeya Rishi was a sage. And he was living in a hermitage, a little cave or something. And a bunch of robbers who were running from the police, they took shelter in this cave, and then the police caught them. They rounded up all the criminals, and they took Markandeya Rishi with them. The king decided that all these criminals, they had a big, long, bad history, they should be put to death, executed by being a spear or a lance through the heart. So the execution was taking place, and Markandeya Rishi was right in the middle of them. He was almost ready to be killed when a messenger came. Don't kill him. He's not one of the criminals. He's a sage. So the sage was let free. The king apologized very much. But Markandeya Rishi was very angry about this. So he went to Yamaraj. And he said, why did this happen to me? Why did I almost have to be killed like this? It was so terrifying. And Yamaraj says, when you were a child, you took a straw and you pierced the body of ants with this straw, like children do sometimes. Huh? So some little ant, you were piercing them with the straw. So because you did that, you had to undergo this difficulty. So the Markandeya Rishi became really angry. He thought that was too extreme punishment for such a childish crime. So he first Yamaraj that you have to take birth as a Shudra. And so therefore Yamaraj was born as Vidura. Now this curse was actually a blessing because this gave him an opportunity to talk about Krishna and to preach Krishna consciousness, which he did. So the whole story about Vidura, the half brother of Dhritarashtra and Pandu is there in Mahabharata and everything, and how he saved Dhritarashtra at the last. So that was Yamaraj who was getting this opportunity. So while he was away as Vidura, Aryama took his place in supervising the hellish planets. There's another story like that. So anyway, go through this chapter. Shukadeva Goswami continues to say to him, we should stop now, it's getting late. So So you can go through this. One thing is, after this whole description of the hellish planets, Maharaj Pariksit, who heard this, was really deeply disturbed. And so in the beginning of the next canto, yeah, the sixth canto, his question is that, is there any way that people can avoid even the chance of going to hell? He said, we see that this is the system that you, because he's a devotee, he's a Vaishnava, he's very, very compassionate, he couldn't stand it. All these people are suffering like this. Because Prabhupada explains that a devotee, maybe if one is well situated in Krishna consciousness, really has no reason to suffer anymore. Doesn't really suffer. Because you don't identify with the material body, and there's no suffering in the material world, and everywhere is Krishna. Even Prabodhananda Saraswati says that for a devotee, the whole material world becomes as good as Vaikuntha. It's just like Vaikuntha. But still, a devotee, even though he has nothing to suffer, he suffers when he sees that others are suffering. Bhagavanath Das Goswami described thanking Sanatana Goswami for his mercy, calls him Paradukha Dukhi. Because he's a devotee, he suffers when he sees that others are suffering. Bhagavanath Das Goswami said, I was suffering in material life, and so Sanatana Goswami had mercy on me because he was Paradukha Dukhi. He suffered when he saw others, the suffering of others. The Maharaj Pariksit was like that. And so in the sixth canto, there's a very interesting discussion. He says, we see that people are punished by the laws of karma for their sinful activities, but still, people again commit sinful activities. He says, this suffering is called an atonement, prayastita. But it's like the bathing of an elephant. When the elephants go in the water and take bath, they come back again, they throw dirt over themselves. So we see so many times people, even though they're not, it's a bad deterrent, it doesn't really stop people. So sometimes, sometimes if they just hear about what happens if you do something wrong, they'll stop. Others, if they also see other people suffer, the reactions of their crimes or sins, then they'll stop. But then there are people who we're punished ourselves, we suffer ourselves, and still we go on to do it. What's to be done? So then, Shukadeva Goswami tells him about the power of the devotional service. Because even though one may refrain from sin, still the potential for material activities is there, and that a devotional service destroys even that. It destroys all sinful reactions so thoroughly that they will not come back, the way the sun makes the fog go away in the morning.
Like the fire burns the ash, puts into ash.
Yeah, well, he gives the example of tapasa, brahmacharya, saninacha, dhaninacha. You do these kind of activities. And he says that destroys sinful reactions like the fire in a bamboo forest. Everything is burnt up. But still, in the bamboo forest, the underground, the bamboo comes back up again. So then he says, ki chit kivalaya bhaktya narayana parayana. There are some who perform devotional service dedicated to Narayana. And for those people, I can't remember exactly the next line, their sins are destroyed completely, Nihara Eva Bhaskaraha, the way the sun dissipates the fog. It's in other words, without any choice, chance of it's coming back. There's fog in the valleys in the morning. The sun rises, the fog goes away, and that's it for the day. It's gone. It doesn't come back. So he says, this is devotional service. Then to illustrate the power of devotional service, to destroy sinful reactions, he tells the story of Ajamya, the history of Ajamya. So that's the devotee's reaction to hearing this. All these hells, and just want to see that even if I myself am practicing Krishna consciousness and doing everything properly, still other people are. They're still caught up in this, mrityu samsara, vartmani. They're traveling on this circle path of birth and death in the material world. What about them? How can they be saved? This is a devotee. Okay, anything else? Yes?
I just wondered about sometimes I come across with people whose ancestors are dead and sometimes he appears back to them like their grandfather or something. And he's coming and they see nice scenery and feeling all this fine and so on and so on. Another time he told me that the former grandfather is now a protection angel, so to say. And I don't know what kind of area this is.
Yeah, who knows? Even though sometimes it's maybe they're not real, yeah, maybe it is. I can't say what happens. Of course, there's such a thing as ghosts. That's another intermediate position, but those people are not enjoying it at all. And then sometimes they people report on these kind of things. Could be Pitriloka, from Pitriloka they can do like that.
There are also sadhana shaktis, those who bring dreams to the head.
Those who what?
Bring dreams, like Satnashwari.
I see.
They can also bring illusionary dreams.
I'm saying it could be not real also. You can have these visitations that looks real, but it's not. It's hard to say. Okay. Yeah.
Is the severity of the punishment according to your knowledge and realization?
If it's the crime, if you have knowledge and you do something, it's worse for you than if you had none. It's the same in English. From those to whom much has been given, much is expected. Right? So the standards are higher. So if a Brahmin commits a sinful activity, much worse than a Shudra. So punishment is more severe for that person. So the whole thing about karma is very intricate. Most of us have a mixture of good karma and bad karma. There's the story about King Nriga in the 10th canto. A king who was giving in charity to Brahmanas and accidentally gave the same cow twice, which meant that he had stolen from a Brahmana. So he had the choice, because he was so pious, he had to go to the heavenly planets, but because he had made this mistake, he had to spend time in the hellish condition. So he was asked, which do you want first? I'll get the hell this part over with. So he took birth as a lizard in a well or something. So he had it. Then he was, because actually he was saved by Krishna directly, so it wasn't so bad, but it wasn't bad at all. But there was this mixture. So I don't know. I really don't know how these things are sorted out by Yamaraj and his agents, but they have ways of doing it. Okay. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.